Welcome to episode 16 of the Midweek F1 podcast. This is officially the last look at the race just gone and the first look at the Grand Prix coming up. If you haven't subscribed yet, where on earth have you been? What you've been doing? Subscribe on YouTube or on your podcast channels. Click follow, please. I am Nicola Hume. I am your host. And as always, I am joined by the commentary legend, who, by the way, has been counting down the days of this pesky summer break. But he's back, Mr. Ben Edwards.
Thank you. Yes, Formula One is back. And what a crazy race it was at Zandvoort over the weekend. So much going on. Lots for us to discuss and talk about. So that's the first stage of this. We're going to talk about it a lot.
Yeah. And because we have so much to talk about, it's only right that we're bringing our guest first thing. So please welcome to the show F1 reporter, commentator, author, and all-round Wonder Woman, Jenny Gow.
I haven't worn my cape. I'm so sorry. I did not get the memo.
Well, now you just look silly.
I know. I looked silly before. That's okay, though. I'm perfectly adept with looking silly.
It's great to have you with us, Jenny. Thank you so much for coming along. It really is. And we'll be getting your thoughts as well on the We Need to Talk About feature. And it's not going to be about a team or a driver. It's going to be about the organisation of the referees in Formula One.
I love that you line that up just for me. It's not awkward enough. I have to go to the paddock this weekend, but I have to go with having spoken quite widely about the FIA. Yes. Thanks for that.
We'll be discussing that later. Yes. And then we will have our midweek championship of the world, prediction championship of the world. Now, how did we get on with the Dutch Grand Prix? Spoiler alert, it is so close on points. So there's literally about 3 points between all of us. We'll reveal all later.
That's going to be fun to see, isn't it? And then, of course, we'll be looking into what comes up next. Next weekend, we've got Monza, one of the most classic events in Formula One. And, of course, Ferrari's home race. So there's plenty to talk about there and trying to predict who's going to win.
Right. Now, the Dutch Grand Prix was crazy. It was a very nice welcome back. We've had a long break during summer. We've come back and we've come back with a bang. I mean, if you look at the opening lap, you had the McLarens up front. It was all very exciting. The weather started playing a part. Then we lost both Ferraris. But I think the important thing that we kind of need to acknowledge is if Lando had overtaken Oscar, then it would have only been 2 points in the championship. But because there was then a problem with his car, it's now 34 points between them.
Absolutely. And you know, I think a lot of us felt for Lando because he'd done a good job all weekend. You know, yeah, it didn't look like he was probably going to get past Piastri. But as you say, the points would have been so close anyway. But now out of that race, that was painful. Of course, it did give a lift to one in particular. We'll be talking about that a little bit more. Isaac Hadjar, that fantastic third place finish. But we'll talk about that a bit more.
I thought about one or two of the others.
Did?
I cried. I totally
yeah,
cried.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You were so happy. One or two of the others that maybe, you know, it's not such a big story, but some of the mid teams had some really great results. The fact that Ollie Bearman came from the back from a pit lane entry to finish in sixth place, that was just amazing. Well done. And they got points for both from both drivers for that Haas team. So that was really, really encouraging.
I have to say that team's championship is really feisty. Yeah. Look at it with Aston Martin moving up and down, Sauber moving up and down. It's a real fight for that midpoint, and there's so much at stake for that. It's like $9 million for each place you get. Yeah. So it really means a lot to these smaller teams.
And yet both Aston's got points, didn't they? Yeah. I mean, that's unusual too, to see both Lance Stroll and Fernando getting points.
Especially after such a poor weekend for Lance Stroll.
Yeah.
And he fought back and he outscored Fernando Alonso. Yeah. Who would have thought that when he crashed in qualifying again?
Yeah.
Well, Lance just pulled a Lance, didn't he? And gave us a whole mixed bag of everything, which is just what he likes to do.
But there were some incidents, and we will be getting into this a little bit more, I do believe.
Yes, right. Here is the plan. Here's what we always do on this podcast. Producer Jim has a whole list of stuff for us to talk about. So over to you, Producer Jim.
Okay, let's start with the first lap move from Max on Lando. Max was caught out by a bit of sand on the track. Amazing move or somehow disaster averted? Discuss.
A bit of both, I think, wasn't it? It was an amazing move until the sand got underneath him. And then, honestly, to save that, he did such a good job.
That's natural talent from Max. So many drivers would have lost it at that point, but he held it and he still held the place. It was impressive. And to get past on that opening lap, you know, on soft tyres, that's exactly what he had aimed to do. He nearly got it wrong, but it made it work, didn't he, Jenny?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really showed the class of the driver to rescue a tank slapper, easy for me to say, mid-turn.
Yeah.
The deftness of his touch with that car, a car that he doesn't particularly get on with, he doesn't like, but he managed to rescue that. And it was a real reminder of how talented he actually is, because, as you say, many people would have lost that.
Yes, he is wonderful. Producer Jim.
Okay, Ferrari turn three, hoodoo one. Lewis gets caught out by a bit of light rain and a slippery painted area on the track and crashes out. Schoolboy error, or why is there a painted advert on the outside of a banked corner with no runoff? Discuss.
Yeah, I was thinking that, because there wasn't a runoff, was there?
Well, there never is that much of a runoff.
Yeah.
At that point of the circuit. It's an old school circuit. Zandvoort is lovely. Follows the dunes around, undulates beautifully. It is a challenge for all the drivers. And can I just remind you, Producer Jim, that this isn't newly painted for Sunday. It's there.
Yeah, Jim.
All weekend. So I think he probably knew it was there. So I don't think he planned to go there. But going there, especially in the damp conditions, he risked it. And he ruined his race.
Yeah, so unusual, isn't it? But that Ferrari has snapped on him a few times this year, you know, and usually he has such great talent, like we saw with Max controlling his moment. Unfortunately, Lewis did not control it, and it did hurt him. But it was good to see him coming into the weekend being more positive generally. I'm interested to see, and we'll talk about this later, how it goes for the next race at Monza, which, of course, is an important one for Ferrari.
Producer Jim.
Okay, Hamilton's crash brings out a safety car, and on the restart, Lawson and Sainz tangle in what looks like a racing incident. But Sainz gets a 10-second penalty, which he is fuming about. Is he right to be furious? Discuss.
Yes.
I think he has the right
to be furious.
Yeah, then. I think I was really surprised he got a 10-second penalty. Yeah. It just seemed like a racing incident to me, I have to say. It wasn't perfect from either of them in a way, but it was a racing incident. That's what racing's about. And when it happens, they both lost tyres. It ended their race. It was sad in a way. Why then do you have to give a penalty? I didn't really get that.
No. And the fact that Sainz said, right, I'm going to speak to them. I want to talk to them to discuss what this is all about. And actually, he wasn't allowed to do that. And I know the stewards had a whole sheet of paper that they needed to go through. They needed to clear that deck. And it wasn't going to overrule or override that decision at that point in time. It had been made. It had been served. So there was no real point in having that discussion on the Sunday evening. But going into the race in Italy, I do expect him to sit down with the race director and say, look, this isn't the way I want to go racing. And I'm sure he will be on the WhatsApp chat with all the other drivers saying, back me up here.
Yeah.
And I actually think most of the drivers will back him. I think it was meddling when it didn't need meddling.
Yes, I agree. And I think what was interesting was hearing his radio reaction, because it wasn't like pure anger at first. It was just sheer confusion.
Yeah.
What? I've got a penalty. Well, for what? He genuinely didn't see what he did wrong, and I think everyone else felt the same about that.
It's the lack of consistency that gets it to me, I must admit, with some of the decisions that are made. Sometimes they go one way, sometimes the other. And in some ways, I wish they would employ an ex-driver who really knows their thing and has to live with it all year long, because then you're more likely to make the same decisions instead of changing them. But I know that's not the way they're going to do it.
I mean, it's always a debate within F1. Should they have a fixed driver steward, or should it be rotating? And the fact that you have one driver steward that goes to the next race, there's always some consistency from one to the next. Mm. And with something like this, a science incident, they will get called in to speak about that incident particularly, because they were there for the Dutch Grand Prix and they will be there for Monza. But it's a system that's easily open to confusion, to questioning from fans and media and all sorts of people, drivers alike. And if they had one person, one steward that travelled with the whole show and it was always the same, would they then get into the groove of favouring one driver over another? Because that's kind of happened in the past with that whole thing of, that driver is particularly aggressive and they've got history in the back and they don't like Red Bull. They've got a contract with Mercedes.
Yeah.
There's so many links within F1.
Yeah, that is a point. I do understand that. But it is consistency that I really want to see, and that's what is frustrating. But I do understand what you're saying, because if somebody dislikes somebody or thinks, nah, they're no good, and then they always then give them a penalty, then that gets unfair as well. So you are right, I know.
Producer Jim.
Okay, Ferrari Turn 3 Hoodoo 2. after pulling off an amazing move on George Russell, Charles Leclerc pits to cover off Antonelli's possible undercut threat, but gets taken out by the 19-year-old. Should he have stayed out? Was this another Ferrari strategy fail? Discuss.
Well, first of all, that is a 10-second penalty. That's what makes sense. That should always have been, all day, any day, a 10-second penalty to Antonelli.
Done. Oh, compared to Sainz.
Yes. So now we've got that out of the way, we can discuss Ferrari.
Good. I wouldn't say the two things were parable. If you look at them, they were totally different. They had a totally different cause and effect, those two incidents. Mm. And Sainz getting the penalty the same as Antonelli doesn't make sense to me. One was a racing incident for me, the Sainz one. And Kimi Antonelli, that was an attempt at a racing incident, but got it wrong.
Yeah.
So it's a very different incident.
I totally agree with you. Mm. Whether Ferrari should have made the pit stop or not, I mean, that's a difficult question, because there are a lot of teams that actually came out really well in that Zandvoort race simply because they kept waiting for a pit stop and then safety cars came out at the right time. You just cannot predict when safety cars have a big effect. And I don't blame Ferrari for bringing Leclerc in. He was very composed, wasn't he, afterwards, talking about it as well. He was disappointed to be out. Antonelli had made the mistake. It was disappointing for me that Kimi, who is talented, but, once or twice he's made a few mistakes. It wasn't a good time coming back in after the August break, but I think he can still get it together. And he had quite a good, at least he admitted it afterwards, and let's hope he can move on from that.
Can we discuss Leclerc on his phone?
Oh, yeah.
I don't get it. What the heck? This doesn't make sense to me.
There was an image of him, wasn't there?
There was footage of him sat on the little mound, and he had his phone in his hand. And you're like, how does that make sense? Is there like a glove box or something in the car that he keeps his phone in? That doesn't make sense. How has he got his phone?
So what I want to know is, who gave him that phone? Was it a marshal? I expect it was. Was it a fan, a photographer that happened to be there?
Could be.
It could have been, but it certainly wouldn't have been his phone. So that leads us on to the question of, if he had a phone and he was trying to call someone, I don't think he was. Maybe he was just listening to commentary. But if he was trying to call someone, whose number would he have? How many numbers do you know?
You're a numbers girl. Yeah,
I
know my husband's number. I know my mum's number. And my sisters, yeah.
I can probably phone my parents when they were living in my old house 22 years ago. I remember that number on the landline.
Yeah.
Anyone else know?
Well, I remember one or two phone numbers, but not this, like the old days. When I grew up, I used to remember lots and lots of phone numbers. But nowadays, it just doesn't work the same way.
I wonder if he was leaving a voice note on Instagram for his missus.
Maybe.
That would be, you could do that on someone else's phone, couldn't you?
No, but then she's not going to see it if they don't follow each other. That still doesn't make any sense. I think that was his phone.
No, it couldn't have been. That is very much illegal.
But maybe someone got his phone.
If they could get a phone to him, they could probably get him back to the garage.
I don't know.
He was stranded.
Jenny, you could find out when you go to Monza next week and ask him.
I will find out things. Shall I just phone him now?
That'd be great. Do you know his number?
No. Obviously not. Can't remember it.
Producer Jim.
That was a good one. Okay. Right. The 2025 F1 Drivers' Championship changed in a plume of smoke with Lando's engine failure. Is this the moment we are denied a battle to the last race? Discuss.
Oh, yes. You really feel that, Jenny, do you?
Absolutely, 100%.
Do you?
It could have been 2 points. That gap is so close, but you look at it, it's the largest gap this year. 34 points is massive.
And it reminds you of an event that you and I both remember very, very well. Just remind us.
So it was Malaysia 2016. And Lewis Hamilton's car just exploded. It went kaput in the largest sense of the word. The engine just ripped through and apart. I think there was a bit of fire, and you could see Lewis Hamilton climbed out of the car, and he was sat on his haunches, and you could see his world championship that he battled so hard for, you could see it just slipping away from him. It's like a spirit rising up after someone had died. And I had the same shiver moment seeing Lando just walk away from that car and knowing this is the second year in a row that he's tried his hardest to battle for a championship and it just hasn't come together. Of course, there still might be something, but it feels like it's a gap that's too big.
So it's Nico Rosberg's title that you're talking about, of course. Yeah. I mean, what do you think, Nico?
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, who's to say the issues with Lando's car could also happen to Oscar's car at some point?
Yeah, and we've still got quite a few races to go, haven't we?
So 9 races still to go.
Yeah.
So Lando would have to finish first with Piastri second on 5 occasions of those 9 races. And that isn't taking into account sprints. And I just think the metronomic precision of Oscar Piastri was already a challenge for Lando Norris, who isn't as consistent. He's a phenomenal talent.
He is.
We all know that. Yeah. Lando is so quick, so good. But when it comes to consistency and winning a world championship, that's where it falls apart for him.
Yeah.
And I hate saying that. I honestly do. I'd love to see him as a world champion.
Oh. I know. It's a disappointing way for him to lose those points. But, you know, let's see, because I don't think it's over yet. And who knows? Piastri may have a problem at some stage, whether the car breaks down or he gets taken off by somebody else.
Who knows?
That can still happen with this amount that we've got till the end of the year.
Producer Jim.
Okay, let's get into the positives. Good rookie, Antonelli, bad rookie. Good rookie is Ollie Bearman's storm from the pit lane to sixth place, as we mentioned earlier. However, what I want to know is Haas's stay out until something happens strategy, pit strategy, is that genius or luck? Discuss.
I think it's genius.
Genius and luck.
Yeah.
Can it be both? I think it can be both.
I think knowing that the weather was going to be a bit all over the place, I think it is a bit more genius, I guess, because you kind of roughly can predict someone's probably going to go off if there's a bit of rain over one part of the track.
Look, they had nothing to lose.
Exactly.
Ferrari had to make sensible decisions. They had lots to lose. But in that situation, Haas, they could back that. And we've seen other drivers back that and succeed. If you think about the way that Esteban Ocon won in Hungary, was it? I can't remember.
Yes.
Alpine. Yeah. And they just hung on and hung on because they didn't have anything to lose. They could only win out of that situation. And it's the same, I think, for Haas yesterday.
Yeah.
They just called it right. And I think bravo to them. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. No, it was impressive.
Producer Jim.
Okay, let's talk about him.
Just say the name I want you to say, please.
He came third. It was his first podium. Isaac Hadjar. What a race. Now, my question is, does this mean he'll now get the dreaded second seat at Red Bull? Or, in a post-Captain Christian Horner world, is that a good thing? Discuss.
Okay, right. First of all, I think it was wonderful. I cried. I didn't want to be that person, but I genuinely cried. Yes, I was texting our WhatsApp group going, guys, I'm an absolute emotional mess.
Did you take a picture of you crying and send it to the group?
I didn't. I'm not that person.
That is a shame. Because I would have liked that.
When I cry, I ugly cry. No one wants to see that. No one wants to see that. I was over the moon. It wasn't just the fact that he got his first podium. It was the fact that Max was up there with him. And it was such a special moment. That is how you do a podium for someone's first time. That's how Nico Hülkenberg should have had his first podium.
The celebration.
Because it's only right that you absolutely douse them in champagne. It wasn't fair back in Silverstone. He needed that big celebration. And obviously there was drama and stuff going on. But seeing Isaac's face. Isaac.
Yeah, exactly. Isaac or Isaac?
Isaac.
So for me, it's always been Isaac. I've heard it on the TV. I've heard it on the radio. I've spoken to him. It's been Isaac. And all of a sudden, over the weekend, it's changed.
Yeah.
Why?
Crofty on Sky was flipping between the two. I was getting a bit confused.
No, that's right. I heard that too. And so, I was wondering too, because I've done bits of commentary and I thought initially he wanted to be as Isaac Hadjar or through the team. But it does sound as though maybe, because I think Isaac Hadjar is how he is known more normally, isn't it? So, let's see. It's all good fun.
I disagree with the fact that drivers should be allowed to change their names. No, absolutely. Daniel Ricciardo tried it. I spoke to him at the beginning of his career. We were on good terms. And I said, how do you want me to say your name? Daniel Ricciardo. Fine, done. You thought that that would have been an easy conversation to have. Yeah. Only partway through his career, all of a sudden, people started calling him Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah.
Like, where is that from?
Yeah.
So can a driver please, as soon as they come to F1, declare your name, how you would like to have your name said, spelt, pronounced, and stick with it.
Yeah, well, we'll stick with it.
Yes.
Isaac says Isaac, but I think I need to try and train my brain to say it as that, to kind of, if that's how he wants to say his own name, then we all need to say his name like that and try and get that into our brains. Because I sent a message to Harry Benjamin so we could have a full commentary discussion about this. And he says Isaac.
Yeah.
And he said, it depends on how French you are. I said, how French are you? He said, 1/16. So he's still going Isaac.
How French are you?
It was...
I'm like 6% French or something. I did one of those ancestry things. So there's French in me, so I'm going to go Isaac.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to struggle, but that's fine.
For him to get a podium at his 14th event, when we'd seen Hülkenberg at his 239th event, I do think that that was really very, very special. And funnily enough, I was looking back, and of course, when Max Verstappen was driving for that team, when it was Toro Rosso, he'd never actually got a podium for the team.
No.
His first podium was his first win when he went to Red Bull in Spain the following year. So it was his 24th. So yeah, Hadjar's done well. He's done well.
He is such an unproblematic king. He is amazing. Did such a solid job. No drama. Got his stuff done. Obviously, Lando's then left the race. He's got himself a podium. He just carried on doing what he's doing, and that's it. And I think he absolutely smashed it. And potential, I know, producer Gina, I'm coming on to the Red Bull thing. I know, obviously, we need to discuss who's going to be in which seat for next season. There is potential for him to be in the Red Bull seat alongside Max. And I don't think that would be a bad thing if it's starting from next season, because you've got a new car, new engine, all that sort of stuff. So actually starting again from scratch for both Max and Isaac, I think that could potentially work.
Yeah.
Cool. I agree, though.
Thoughts?
Don't you? As long as he gets the full season.
Jenny's disagreeing with me. It's fine. Carry on.
Is that okay? Am I allowed to disagree? I don't know.
Of course.
In the BBC, you kind of just disagree for the sake of it. But normally it's because it's what you believe. So the fairy tale is Isaac had... Oh, I can't say it. Hadjar. I mean, look at his Australia. Crashing out on the formation lap, being comforted by Lewis Hamilton's dad, Anthony. And you got a sense of... like, the world willed him on after that point. Yeah. And if he had crashed out and come back and maybe hadn't found Anthony and just sulked back to his paddock home and moodily got on with things, I'm not sure how much we would have bought into his story. But actually, Anthony bumping into him, the crying, the emotion, and being able to go, I'm rooting for this guy. I don't know him, but I'm rooting for him as a fan.
Yes.
I think that paid off so massively over the weekend. You bought into his story and you bought into his success, and it was lovely to see. And as you say, that Red Bull seat is, it's an issue. It always has been.
For this season, yes.
And all the seasons before this one.
Maybe, yes.
And I feel like Christian Horner exiting has left a slight window of opportunity for Yuki Tsunoda.
Ah.
Before that event, I would have thought, Tsunoda's definitely out at the end of the year. But with the difference of management and Mekia's stepping in as team boss, I believe that he might be convinced to give Tsunoda another year and another attempt. We'll have to see what the next few races deliver.
Yeah.
But getting into the points this weekend has helped him. And does Hadjar actually want to step up? Does anyone want to fill that seat? Because it's cursed. It's honestly cursed. They need someone to come in and uncurse it, because it is the poison chalice.
Could be that guy.
He could be.
Yeah.
But would you equally expose him to that at this point in his career?
I don't
honestly
know.
It's really hard. Because you love him.
I do.
You don't want to burn him.
But him and Max would just be amazing. And also, because I host the podcast for Red Bull, I really want to meet him. So if he could actually have that second seat, then I'll get to meet him.
I mean, so you could just go to a race and meet him.
I mean, I could. But for selfish reasons, I want to...
Take a sign.
Oh, I would totally do that.
Isaac!
Isaac!
Marry me!
I'd pronounce it correctly, so then he'd definitely come and chat to me. Right, team, yeah, good discussion so far. Lovely, lovely. We need to discuss what's been going on social media over the last few weeks, which is, of course, Cadillac. They have made their announcement. We now know the driver lineup. We know it's going to be Bottas. We know it's going to be Checo. Lovely stuff. Now, what we did was we put out a video that went out on social media to discuss who we thought it was going to be. This was before the announcement. And we've had some comments. So this is from Craig Penfold on TikTok, who says, I want Valtteri Bottas and Alex Dunn. Forrest Gump, Gen X on TikTok. Why bring the old lads back? Bottas and younger driver. Damien Gary on TikTok. Perez had his time. It's time for new blood. Thoughts, please.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, that's quite brutal.
Really brutal.
Yeah.
I first want to say how impressed I was with Cadillac's news drop.
Yeah.
I thought it was really impressive.
Keanu Reeves.
And the way they did it, the way they orchestrated it, getting the drivers to buy into it, I thought it was a real masterclass in PR and comms. They can't override the public, unfortunately, no matter how shiny and glossy that was. And the public don't want it. They don't want a same old reliable drivers. For me, I think it's a masterstroke. I think it's really clever.
Yeah.
But fans, not so much.
I think it's interesting. I think Valtteri Bottas has still got a lot of talent, there's no doubt. And I think he could be a very effective leader as the driver. Sergio Perez, yeah, I mean, I can understand the some people saying, oh, come on, he's had his time in Formula One, time for him to move on. On the other hand, from a commercial side, he brings good commercial support to the team.
I love your eyebrow raise.
Yeah.
We all know what that means.
But also, Mexican driver exactly. for an American team just makes sense.
That makes a difference. Yeah, absolutely. That will help the support for the team in a way, having a Mexican driver. So I think it kind of does make sense, as long as I do hope that they build up a bit of support for rookies as well, and that they may be, you know, telling us, well, we've got these guys who are we're supporting and who may well come up to the team. When you get into that first year, it does help to have people who know what they're doing, because there is so much to learn for everybody involved. And those two drivers will know an awful lot, there's no doubt. It may just help them get going, and then they can start to bring in the younger drivers.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And a year out is a very powerful thing in F1. We always think, oh, a driver isn't in a seat this year, it's disaster. But actually, look at the way that Bottas has navigated that space. Yeah. Gone to Mercedes as a third driver, and actually his brand is so much higher now than it was before. His stock has risen.
Yeah.
And actually I think his time away from a racing seat and Perez will have taught them a lot, and they come back with a very different mindset. And I think it's exactly what Cadillac need.
Yes.
It's interesting you say that, because actually one of the things I wanted to talk to you, Jenny, and Toto was saying this yesterday, that he's obviously a little disappointed to lose Bottas from the team as their test driver and reserve driver. But what we really want to know is, are Mercedes sticking with what they've got? And what is the latest on that?
See, this is the perks of having you on the show, because you can give us gossip that we don't know about.
I love it.
Tell us all the things.
Okay, I'll tell you one of the things. so I've spoken to Mercedes, and they have said that it's a done deal. They just haven't done the contracts yet.
Oh.
So we know what's going to happen. Yes, for both drivers.
Right.
So they're just ironing out the creases, and they will let us know in due course with a probably rather bland press statement, I would expect. I hope it isn't. I hope it's Cadillac style and they've got Brad Pitt there introducing the drivers.
It's a bit harder when you've got the same drivers.
Exactly. But yes, it's all
just
but
be George
done,
doing that.
But they just, exactly, with Kimmy's head. It's all but done, but they haven't officially announced it. That's my belief. And I don't know how you feel about that, because Kimmy's performances haven't been as good as we hoped, I suppose. And I remember this time last year, the fanfare that surrounded Antonelli coming into Monza. He did that FP1. Everyone was saying, this is a generational talent, whatever that means. And everyone was so excited. And I just feel like he hasn't really delivered on that.
But he's had a podium.
He's had a podium
in Canada.
He's scored Grand Prix. Decent points out of all the rookies.
He has done a good job, although he has made some mistakes. And again, he did this weekend. But I think he has got talent. And I can understand Toto at times just thinking, should I carry on? But I do understand his decision.
Do you think he's in a similar camp to maybe Piastri's first year? Because Piastri had a few errors, wasn't the polished driver that we see now.
That's
but actually, fast forward, and over the winter break, I don't know how many Weetabix he managed to have, or shredded wheat or whatever, porridge. But whatever he ate from December last year to January, February this year was amazing. I mean, the change in that man, boy, I want to still say, but in that driver
yeah,
is remarkable from one season to the next. And it proves that it can be done. And I just wonder if Kim is doing the same thing, just learning, finding his feet. And next year, maybe the year after, he'll come out the box hard.
Yeah. And I also think that, as you said, with the change of rules on the cars are going to be completely different next year. Yeah. So nobody really knows which driver is going to react to these cars in the best way until we get into it.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, Racing Bulls still don't have their lineup.
No.
Your thoughts on that, please?
They're leaving it for a while, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's no rush, though.
No, exactly. There? They often
especially leave it a bit.
For them. Yeah.
They've had a massive change at Red Bull, and the whole thing needs to filter down. You can't have Racing Bulls without Red Bull. Mm-hmm. The decisions need to be made at the top for it to filter down. We all know roughly what they're thinking, unless they pull a blinder out, which they kind of did this year. Did you know Hadjar would go into Racing Bulls?
No.
I didn't.
No.
I wasn't expecting that name to jump out. So there's always room for someone to come in that we weren't expecting. And I think in that team especially, you never know quite what they're thinking, what Dr. Helmut Marko has got up his sleeve. And it might be, you know, poaching Alex Dunn and bringing him in. They might go outside. They've got Arvid Lindblad.
Arvid, yeah.
He's very good. Do they bring him in? I would expect so, but you never quite know with Red Bull.
Potentially, I mean, you would assume maybe Yuki would follow Honda. Yuki would become reserve driver for Aston Martin. That means that Isaac's going to step up into the second Red Bull seat, and then Liam Lawson will stay where he is, and then Arvid would come alongside Liam Lawson.
Can you see that really happening?
Yeah.
Lawson staying?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
Ben?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think, as you say, it's very open at the moment still.
Because he's still been, like, scoring points. No, he's not. He's not been as good
as
Isaac, but he's still been, I think, doing a reasonably solid job.
Okay. That's good.
Let's agree to disagree. That's perfectly fine.
Another quick question for you, Jenny.
Yeah.
Another one, but not about this, but about McLaren actually. Mm. And you would just continue a little bit actually on what you were saying about Oscar and Lando, because so much of this year is about that championship battle, and I know you now feel that Lando's taken a big dip with that engine problem. But you've been to many of the races, you know the McLaren crew very well. How do you feel they've been doing all this together? And do you think the relationships between Piastri and Norris still okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they've done such a good job. I cannot fault the way Zak Brown and Andrea Stella have run that team. Mm. It is a masterclass. And there will be books written about this chapter of F1 history. And we've seen at Mercedes, when they were dominating, the tension that rose between Hamilton and Rosberg, who used to be best friends and now don't even speak to each other. Mm. And I think to control that sense of environment and teamwork is truly masterful. To be able to do that week in, week out, and not have this long-awaited clash.
Mm.
And we're all fans. We're all waiting for it to happen.
Yeah.
And each round you go, surely this is a round where it falls apart. They can't keep on doing it. They've got such an advantage in the Constructors' Championship. I mean, it's mega, the advantage they have. No one will catch them. It could be done by Baku. So if they continue at this rate, the Constructors is done.
They could just have a bit of fun, really.
They could.
Yeah.
But don't you feel that that's where they've been all season?
Yeah.
They've been having fun. They've been able to go out there and compete to a point.
Yeah.
Not cross over that
but
point.
But slightly controlled. You're right.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
And
that
Stella has made that. Honestly, it's phenomenal what he's been able to do.
Very clever.
And he's worked with some of the best in the business at Ferrari,
yes,
his time with Alonso. But when they announced he was stepping in as team principal to McLaren, I was a bit surprised. I was like, wow, that's quite the step up from a driver, performance coach, to an engineer, to actually leading the team.
Mm.
But what he's able to do is balance the highs and lows, which we saw perfectly this weekend with the crash and the win, and almost cancel each other's out and say,
yeah,
you know, we know someone's going to be really excited and really happy this weekend, and the other is going to be destroyed. And somehow he manages to make that okay.
Yeah.
I don't know another boss who can do that.
No, I agree, actually. He keeps it all together. He keeps it all together. And I do feel that's done extremely well.
And yeah, it's a real team. I don't know anyone else that can do that as a team and say, you know, even when it comes to the failure, it was an oil leak, which was chassis related. But even without knowing that, speaking straight after the race, he said, this is our team. This is Mercedes engines and us working together. It's no one person. We are united.
Yeah.
And that's really where to just not blame anyone.
Yeah, no, he's very good.
It's impressive.
He's very good. Well, we've got plenty to talk about, but we've got all we need to talk about. And it's not going to be about a team, and it's not going to be about drivers. It's going to be about the stewards and how they made some decisions over the course of this weekend.
We really need to talk about this.
Yes,
yeah, well, of course, we spoke earlier about the Lawson and Carlos Sainz tangle. 10-second penalty for Carlos. That did seem very strange. There might have been an investigation, of course, into the Leclerc-Russell gathering. Leclerc got past Russell. There was touch of contact there. No, there was nothing done in the end, of course, because Leclerc went out of the race anyway. But what are our thoughts in this going forwards? You know, we did mention it a little bit earlier, but do we think there should be changes in the way that they are doing all of this?
I find talking about the FIA slightly difficult.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. They are one of the controlling factors in F1, and we kind of sign up every year and see what happens.
Yeah.
And this year it's been fairly troubled. Over the last 18 months, the ship hasn't been steady.
Quite a few people have gone, haven't they?
Like
Steve Nielsen, yeah, Tim Gossett, they've gone. Various others have been.
Yeah, quite senior people as well.
Yeah.
Within the FIA organisation. And obviously, the election is going to happen for the president at the end of December, I believe.
I think so.
Am I right with that? And we heard a whole load of rumours about who was going to stand. We read things about Carlos Sainz Sr. standing, but that faded away. So there is a rival candidate. And I'm hoping that it's a really open, honest, fair fight between the two people. But the FIA is a thing of mystery. And if you look higher up, it's all the different sports organisations around the world that have to vote. And it's really complicated. And I can't really go into too much detail.
Yes, you can.
I'll put this as a rhetorical question then. How much do you trust that process?
I don't. Not really.
Yeah.
And that, as journalists and people in media, to not have utter faith in that process leaves you scratching your head. And we know the history of the FIA, don't we? If you cast your mind way back to the Senna film, it goes that far back, maybe even further, of this distrust between the media and the FIA, and now the FIA and F1. And you just have to think, is there a point when F1 steps away and goes, you know what? We got this. We don't need the FIA. We'll call it something else and we'll carry on with the driver's buy-in and F1 and we'll make our own regulations.
Ooh.
Can you foresee a point in time where that actually happens?
Well, there have been battles, as you say, in the past, but it has just about always come back together again. In a way, I hope it does stay together. But there is always this little bit of conflict. I think that has always been a part, particularly at Formula One, at the very, very highest level of motor racing. It is a part of it. Always will be.
Because you forget how much they actually oversee the FIA. Every inch of motorsport is covered by them. They overlook everything. But it seems like there's always drama within F1, not so much within everything else. It's always F1, there's drama.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's more visible and there's a lot more money involved. Yeah. You're talking millions and billions involved in F1. And it's just a funny aside because every time there's a fine within F1, it goes to the FIA. And I always think, oh, Christmas funds are looking good this year.
Yeah.
Because what do they do with that money?
I don't know.
There's been calls from the drivers and teams for more transparency. And I think it is really crucial that the FIA step up and have more transparency and they speak to us, to fans, to all the drivers and teams and say, you know, this is what we're doing. It's not cool to be behind this glass door and move things about without any transparency at all.
Okay, well, it's great to have that conversation. But
yeah, thanks for that. I really enjoyed it.
That's good. That's good.
Every point.
Every good. No, but we've got to move on now. We've got to think ahead.
Yes.
We've got to cast forward because we've got another great classic event coming up this weekend, Monza.
I love Monza.
In Italy. It's a huge event. And, of course, the fans who love Ferrari, and they saw Charles Leclerc take the victory last year, which was amazing. And actually, I was just looking back, and the last five races at Monza have not been won from pole position. That's a bit strange because before that, it always used to be kind of dominated from whoever was on pole. There have been some interesting races here over the last few years. So, what do we think?
Well, we're going to try and stay hopeful for Ferrari after such a terrible weekend last weekend. So, I'm going to try and stay hopeful and say that Charles Leclerc is just going to have a really brilliant weekend.
They can be
maybe
exceptional.
Maybe not so much Lewis. I just can't quite see it. I think it will be another McLaren win, probably. Something along those lines. But I really hope that Ferrari are up there just for the sake of their fans. Because they need it.
Hold this with me, okay? Think.
Ready.
Back to Silverstone last year. Mercedes turn up. They have an absolute tank for a car.
Yeah.
But somehow, in front of the Silverstone faithful, Lewis Hamilton.
I cried at that as well, yeah.
Mm.
I thought that would
be
the case.
I was there, I cried.
He crosses the line first, wins, and the world goes crazy. Because Lewis is back. It might be his last race for Mercedes at Silverstone, but he won. Amazing. Can he do the same thing
for Ferrari
and channel that inner Monza Tifosi spirit and reach the finishing line first? I think yes.
Wow.
Okay.
That's
good. Because, I mean, what we've been this whole time we've been doing this podcast, Lewis has just been up, down, up, down, up, down, and all over the place. So I guess he's now had a down, so he's due an up.
You get it. And he was so down in Hungary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It broke my heart. And I said to him, when he came to the pen on the final day after the race, I said to him, I don't know what to ask you and I don't know how to ask it. We've gone all this route, all this way, and I've always had a question for you. And right now, I have nothing.
Oh.
How do I ask you a good question? And he looked at me and said, this isn't personal. I'm so sorry.
Oh.
And that's Lewis.
Yeah.
He wears his heart on his sleeve almost too much. And I just feel like he needs a break.
Mm.
He's working so hard. And people think, oh, Lewis doesn't care. Lewis is switched off. He's too well, whatever. He has a notebook that he takes to every race. He's one of the last out the track every single day. He works heart and soul to get that car in a place that he can drive. And this isn't his car, but maybe this is his weekend.
Okay.
Wow.
Right. Well, here's where we're going to do our prediction championship of the world.
Oh, no. So, do I have to back that up now?
Well, let's see. So at the moment, the points are so close. So after the weekend just gone, Ben, you are still in the lead.
That's
with
astonishing.
55 points because you've got 6 points for Oscar's.
Well,
so
done. Unlikely.
I'm only 1 point behind you.
Oh, very
54 because I got 10 points for the prediction of Oscar and Matt.
Where am I then?
Team guest, you're 1 point behind that. You've got 53. Got absolutely nothing. You can thank Tom and McCluskey for that.
Mm.
Producer Jim, you got 4 points for Max coming second, so you're at 52. So there's literally 3 points between the entire top
close.
Four.
It's like the midfield race.
Crazy.
Great.
So, predictions. P1, P2, P3, fastest lap. Over to you, Jenny.
Oh, I get first. Okay, I'm going to absolutely go against what I've just said because that's lunacy to predict Hamilton to win, isn't it? So
I believe in Lewis, but if I'm putting money on it.
The reputation of the guests on this show is higher than Lewis Hamilton. Right, I'm going to pick Piastri to win because it's just a no-brainer really, isn't it, at this moment in time. Norris second, Hamilton third.
Oh, Hamilton's going to be on the podium.
So I do stand by my man.
Solid. Yeah.
For third.
Fastest lap.
Fastest lap, Piastri.
Okay.
Is that all you needed?
But that's all we need.
Okay, fine.
Lovely stuff.
Done.
Ben.
Yeah, I'm a bit thrown on this one, I must admit, because Monza, I've often found, is a bit unpredictable. In some ways, I expect Piastri to win, but actually, I'm going to take the risk and put Leclerc up front again. Leclerc for the win, Piastri second. I'm going to go for Hamilton third. And just as a bit of a one-off, I'm going to put Russell fastest lap.
Oh, okay, fair.
In a hot Monza?
Who knows?
You never know.
Let's see.
George does what George does.
He does.
True.
Right, this is really tricky. I'm going to go P1, Oscar, just because it feels like that's what's going to happen. I'm going to go P2 Max. And that's not because I've got a contract with Red Bull.
Yes, it is.
It's because I just think he's great. And I can't predict P1 because I just don't think that's going to happen. So I'm going to go P2 instead for Max. Right. P3, I'm going to go Charles. It just feels right. I feel like Leclerc's going to be up there. I don't know what's going to happen with Lando. He might be losing his head a little bit after the weekend just gone. I don't know. Fastest lap, I'm going to go Lewis.
Nice.
No, just for fun.
Just for fun.
Just for fun.
Give the dog a bone.
Yeah. Producer Jim.
Okay. I'm going to go Lando because he's going to be so pumped and nothing to lose. I'm going to go Leclerc second because he always goes well there.
Yeah.
Oscar third. Steady Eddie. And I'm also going to go Hamilton fastest lap. I think he's going to be there or thereabouts.
Bring on next week then. We're ready. Like I'm so ready for this. Bring it on. Right, as always, as is tradition on this show, we like to finish things off with a random story or random fact from our guest. So what have you got for us this time?
Right. So I was racking my brain about what you would find amusing, funny, useful. And I thought tyres. They're really dull. A lot of the time we talk about tyres and like, blah, 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 move it on. But I wanted to draw your eyes to the sustainability performance of Pirelli.
This sounds really fun.
I know, bear with me. So Pirelli, every weekend, they supply a lot of tyres to F1. You know the numbers, they're a lot.
Yes.
So about 500. So what do you know what happens to those tyres after an event?
They get scraped down real nice, and then they would be recycled into rubber things. Something rubbery.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Other tyres? Road tyres?
Ben, any?
I don't know the detail. I know there is recycling, isn't there? But I'm not quite sure how it goes.
There is recycling, and that is where my story starts and finishes. So they recycle them into kids' playgrounds. So you see the rubber bits that are on the ground, things like that. So they're safe and they cut them up.
Oh, that's good.
And yes, I think so. But what I really wanted, and I pitched this to Pirelli, was that they start to do a Pirelli boot. Boots are made of rubber, yes?
Yeah.
And you can choose your boots. Do you want the super wet ones?
Yeah.
Do you want the intermediates?
Yeah.
Or do you just want a fashionable slick tyre,
just some soft shoe,
boot. And I pitched it to them and I said you could brand them up blue, green, all the different brands, and recycle the tyres that way. They didn't go for it.
I love that idea. I love that.
I would have liked it if they had have gone for that. So that is my lasting pitch to Pirelli. I still will revisit it maybe at some point in time, but I think for them, it would be a masterstroke. And it would get people talking about tyres more favourably.
Yeah. If this was Dragon's Den, that would be a yes.
Would you
for
back
me.
It?
Yeah.
Yes. How much would you invest?
I'd take a lot of the business, though.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a shame, because it's not for sale anymore.
I want a high percentage.
And I think Pirelli might have something to say about that.
Oh, Jenny, it's so great to have you with us. Thank you. So a really great input for all of this. So it's been lovely to have you with us. Of course, we'll be back next week with a different guest, but we will be looking back at what's happened at Monza.
I actually think you should do like the FIA and have a permanent guest with them here, and that could be me.
No. I mean, I'm game. I'm happy with that. That works for me.
I mean, the scoring wouldn't be so good on the actual guest arena and the predictions.
We'll see.
You know.
You never know. You might smash it next week.
Then I definitely won't get invited back.
Well, who knows?
We shall see. We'll be looking back at Monza, and we'll be looking forward to Baku, Azerbaijan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so thank you very much for watching. Don't forget to subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. If you're listening wherever you get your podcast, then click follow, please. Oh, give us your thoughts in the comments section below, please. Was that actually Charles Leclerc's phone? Was that his actual phone?
I think it was his phone.
And also, how do you pronounce Isaac/Isaac? Would love to hear your thoughts. Thank you very much. See you next week.
Cheerio.